Welcome to season two of Hashing Out the Law, the podcast where we discuss and hash out legal issues and our topics. I'm your host, Arash Hashemi. On this episode, I'll be talking to Nikki DeBose. Nikki is a model, author, and an advocate. She's also an ambassador for Patrice Kids, a nonprofit charity dedicated to educating on the signs and symptoms of child sexual abuse. Nikki's debut memoir, Washed Away from Darkness to Light, was released in 2016 and soon after translated into French. Nikki is a survivor of 17 years of abuse and mental illness and believes that all people can go on to recover and feel empowered sexually. Nikki was one of the first models in the world to help pass laws for protecting models and sexually abused children. She was an expert reviewer for Harvard Stripes program, which focused on modeling and eating disorders. I hope you enjoy. Hi, everybody. On this episode of Hashing Out the Law, I have a special guest, Nikki DeBose. Hi, Nikki. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, considering these weird and special times. I'm doing well. Thank you. I'm glad to have you on. And let's just dive right into it. I want to talk to you about your story and your advocacy for people of sexual abuse, victims of sexual abuse. So if you could give us a little bit of background on how you became an advocate.
Well, I am a survivor of child sexual abuse. I like to use the word survivor and overcomer instead of victim, because I think that it has a positive connotation attached to it instead of a negative. And my personal experiences really shaped the person that I am today. And fortunately, I was able to overcome all of the harmful and negative experiences that went along with what happened to me, and went on to help a lot of people through writing my books and going around different parts of Europe and the United States and speaking to people who were victims of child sexual abuse as well, and became an ambassador for this amazing charity. I'm sorry, that's my cat. Give me one second.
Not a problem.
Give me one second. Come here. Which is called Patrice's Kids. And they're a charity based out of Houston, Texas. It was started by this amazing woman named Patrice Griffin, and she is also a veteran who was a survivor of child sexual abuse as well. So we kind of came together, and she asked me to be an ambassador, and I just got started with that a few months ago. But before that, I was ambassadors for several different charities. And one of my friends is Matthew Sandusky, who I'm not sure if you're familiar, but he had a very public case with the Sandusky scandal, and I worked alongside him as well with his charity. So, but all of this started because I was sexually abused by my mother and another guardian, if you will, and never thought I would get out of that situation because it went on for a long time. And it happened in the South. So in the South in the 80s and 90s, there weren't really a lot of protections. People didn't really talk a lot. I mean, they still don't talk about, you know, sexual abuse is not something you just tell people about. But particularly in those times, and the kind of environment that I was brought up in, which was very strict, very Christian, had a heavy religious tone, we didn't talk about it. And I never talked about it because I was scared, because my parents, my guardians were the ones doing it. And I didn't really understand what was happening to me.
So Nikki, I read your book, by the way, and for the listeners and the viewers, there's going to be a link in the episode where you can actually click on it and get Nikki's book, one of her books, actually. So I know a little bit about your background because I read about it. Let me ask you this. So at one point in your life,
did you decide that you needed to talk about this or address this abuse?
That took a long time. I actually didn't even realize that I had been abused sexually. I knew I had been abused physically. I didn't know that I had been abused sexually until much later in my life, until after all the modeling, probably until 26, 27. And that's because I was very sick with other issues, other mental health issues like anorexia, bulimia, depression, psychosis, other things. So when I went in to get help for that and treatment, it they repressed memories and some things came up during treatment. And I didn't even realize that my mother had sexually abused me. I just kind of always knew that my mother had some serious psychological problems, which she eventually passed away from. And I kind of thought, you know, some things weren't right there that went on. But a lot of things were really buried. And I didn't remember them. So through a lot of therapy and dealing with other issues, they came through. But it wasn't until I was older, in my later 20s.
So Nikki, do you think that your other problems, like your anorexia and stuff, was a result of abuse, but you didn't realize that?
For sure. I think, I wouldn't say it was an exact direct link, but I would say like 90% of it. Because, and if you study trauma and the correlation between trauma and eating disorders, there's a lot of material out there. Because when you are abused, and this can be physical, this can be any kind of abuse, but particularly with sexual abuse, when you are sexually abused, your brain chemistry is changed, first of all. You don't understand your own body. There's a great amount of shame and not knowing how to deal with all this shame. So I dealt with that shame as a child, as an eight-year-old, by starting to overeat. And getting into the subconscious part of the brain, what can happen is you are wanting to change your appearance because maybe you feel, again, the shame and the guilt. And so I overate, and then later on in my life, that led into bulimia, which can be trying to repress your feelings and bring them up and not really knowing what feelings you're even trying to repress, which is the trauma. And that can lead on into anorexia, which some doctors believe that's can be caused by trying to just disappear because you're hurting so bad, you're having so much depression and anxiety and a lot of other that you just, it's a very serious problem.
Now, Nikki, you mentioned that you like to refer to yourself as a survivor rather than a victim, which is very important, and I like that. Now, I know that there's people out there that they are victims, but they haven't been able to talk about it or not get over it, but deal with it and move on. But you've done that, and now you're an advocate for those people, and you're there to help them. What advice do you have for them if they're on the brink of asking for help, but don't know where to start?
Well, first of all, it's okay to be a victim because it's not your fault. You know, it's not like, by me saying that, I'm not saying that I'm better or anything like that. That's not what I mean. I'm just saying that you can get to a place where you are whole again and you have healing. I think everybody's different, right? And we all have different, everybody has a very different journey. So for me, I felt it was important for me to get to the place where I didn't feel like a victim, because that mentality was hurting me and it was causing me to be stuck in a very negative space. So I was not able to move forward in my life. Like, I was stuck in an eating disorder that was killing me. I was very sick. I couldn't I couldn't even live. I couldn't wake up every day and be a healthy, normal, functioning person. So, but for someone that feels like they're a victim, that's okay, because you are a victim, because someone has committed a crime against you. Because remember that child sexual abuse is a crime. And it's okay to realize that you have been a victim of a crime. Right. But in saying that, you can get to a place and be an overcomer and an advocate, my purpose in that is explaining that you can one day feel, and my wish for people is that they one day can feel that they are whole, that they don't live in like a bondage. Does that make sense? Like mental torment that someone has hurt them the rest of their life. Because we can, I've met so many people who have experienced like the worst things that have happened to them. Sometimes people have not even realized that they have been sexually abused when they're 75 years old. And I think that it's sad that they can live their whole life and not experience true fulfillment and joy. So there is a process that we all go through of having to let go and move forward and heal from that. And that's what I want for everybody.
That's great. That's I'm glad that there is actual people who have gone through it that are there to help other people. Because it's one thing to help people. It's another thing to know where that person is coming from because you've experienced it. Now, throughout your journey, because this is called Hashing Out the Law. So throughout your journey, were there any specific laws that you think helped you to become from a victim to a survivor? Or do you think, or are there any laws that hindered you? And if there was, what do you think needs to be done to fix those laws?
There definitely were laws that hindered me. And that started when I was a child, actually, because I specifically have memories of being very afraid of the police. And I know we're dealing with this in a very different way right now, but I have my own memories of that when I was a kid. When the police came to my house, because one of my abusers called the police on me, this was like a method of abusing me. And I tried to call my father to tell him that I needed for him to come. I needed to go live with him because I was being, I tried to explain to my dad that this was going on. And I was finally standing up for myself and explaining what was going on. And the police were called the next day after a domestic violence incident. And the very next day, after me being physically abused as a child, I can't remember if there was a sexual abuse incident at that time. I just remember physical assault. And the police said they couldn't do anything about it because it had happened the day before. So I just remember that was a very poignant time, because I thought, gosh, there's nobody to protect me as a child. Not only do I not feel protected in my own home with these people who are supposed to be helping me, they're hurting me, and then the police who are coming over are taking their side. So I felt like that, and I think sometimes we feel like that also in the mental health care system, when we are trying to get help, but we can't get help because we feel broken and we're trying to reach for certain resources, but we're not getting the help that we need. In terms of law, I didn't really see any laws that were helping to address the things that needed to be addressed. So that's why I became an advocate for them, for the things that needed to be addressed. And people laughed at me and they thought they were stupid. And even when I was sitting in the California State Assembly and talking to the lawmakers, which was fine, and they thought that people think that if you are an attractive person that you don't have mental health issues, or that you're not suffering, which couldn't be farther from the truth, because even today I suffer tremendously from severe depression and anxiety and suicidal ideation, and I go to therapy for that. So but I remember in 2016 having serious conversations with people, lawmakers, about statistics and people in the fashion industry models and the high rate of rape, which is a crime, and the high rate of sexual abuse and financial abuse and eating disorders, which have the highest mortality rate of any mental illness, and all of these things that common sense would tell you are alarming and need to be taken care of. And they didn't really care. They didn't really understand. And so I was just tired and mortified and, you know, all these things. So, but it pushed me, and it pushed the team. I was working with this great team at Harvard University. They have this program. You can find them on Instagram. They work for the Boston, they're called a Stripe, Harvard Striped. And they're at the School of Public Health at Harvard University. And they pushed and pushed and pushed, and eventually we got some laws passed to have some protections for models. But it doesn't even really, it creates some change, but I don't really think that in the day-to-day of the modeling industry that people are still going to kind of do what they want to do, right? And treat people the way that they want to treat people. And you still have a high rate of mental illness. And so I don't really know right now what to do about that.
Right. When it comes to the modeling industry, I think people who are not involved in it or want to be involved in it see it as this glamorous industry. And they want to, you know, to be a model is to be glamorous and live a glamorous life. But they really don't know what goes on behind the scenes. So from what you're saying, the whole industry needs to be not revamped, but needs to be more concerned about the people that it's representing, the models themselves. They are actually in need of assistance, and they're not getting it. Is that what you're saying? Or is that one of the things that needs to be revamped about the industry?
They needed basic workplace protections. They needed protections against financial abuse. A lot of the models weren't getting paid even at all sometimes. So they needed, in like a normal job where there was basic protections, they needed those protections. And so we did get a law passed that provided some sort of protections. But the one thing that I was particularly pushing for, and I wrote a program for, was for like mental health education, to make that mandatory even for the agents. I would have loved to have seen that just like a basic education before you even become an agent, before you work in the fashion industry, because there is a very high rate of people who are models that have an eating disorder, and they are suffering. And so I think that you should have some sort of an education on that. That has not really been dealt with, and so I would like to continue working on that. The other law that I worked on was the Child Victims Act, and that was a law that stood in the New York State Assembly for 11 years. Might have been a little bit longer before it was passed, could have been 13 years, but when I was there, it was 11 years. So that bill got held up by the Catholic Church, that's on public record, and they spent $2 million to block that bill. You might see now like commercials for lawyers who are, they just focus on helping victims of Catholic Church abuse and helping them get compensated. But at that time, that was not even on TV.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you up, but what you're talking about is the statute of limitations. Before, there was a statute of limitations for sexual abuse, where if you hit a certain age and a certain time had passed, you couldn't bring a suit. But now with this new law, there's no statute of limitations, and that's what the lawyers are saying. So that's one of the laws. Now, was that something that was in New York and the Catholic Church was trying to not have it passed, and that's the law that you were involved in?
That law was extended. I don't, off the top of my head, do not remember the amount of time that was extended, but it was a very short window. So it was not enough time for survivors to file, because by the time people remember, and this is something they were arguing to death, because by the time people remember what has happened to them, by the time these repressed memories have come up, they weren't able to seek justice in court. So that law was extended. And yes, the Catholic Church, what was your second question? I'm sorry.
No, my question was that law, the law that we were talking about, the ones that the lawyers are advertising on TV, it's California based. Was the law in New York the same sort of law that you guys were trying to pass with the statute of limitations, where it doesn't matter how long has passed, you can still bring suit?
Yes.
Yes, okay. I could pick your brain about everything in your experience and everything. And I know it's sometimes it can be hard for you to talk about it. And I don't want to put you in a position like that. But let's talk about your advocacy and your books and everything else. Now, one of your books, I'm actually holding it in my hand and the viewers can see, Washed Away, From Darkness to Light. It's a memoir, actually. It's a memoir of everything that you went through, correct? Let's talk about a little bit about this book and how you decided to write it and how long it took you. Tell me about your experience of writing this memoir, please.
I wrote my book. I took time off from school. Actually, I went back to school to get my bachelor's, and then my bachelor's degree in psychology. And then I decided I'm going to write my memoir. And then I took like a year and a half from school, and I wrote this book, and my friend helped me edit it. I had no intentions of really seriously getting it published through a publisher. I just wrote it and self-published it, but then God is good, and I got it published in French. So I ended up going on a book tour in French as well. And it's done well. I always wanted to be an author when I was a kid, because I was a really big nerd, and like I loved reading and I always wanted to write books, but I wasn't like obsessed with being, you know, I have to be a perfect author and then I need to like write all these books. But I really enjoyed writing my memoir, and I felt like this was a really important book to write, and I was thankful that I was alive and got the opportunity to write this book. But it was really hard to write this book because there was so much information to put in here, because it's from like the ages of two, who even remembers what they're doing when they're 2 years old? So, you know what I mean? From 2 to like 26 years old, and it's all like really intense information.
There was something interesting you said. You said it was originally published in French. So
it was published, I'm sorry, it's my mistake. It was published in English. So okay. I self-published it originally and had no intentions of getting it published by a publisher, but then I got approached by a big French publisher and they published it in French also. And then I went on a French book tour, which was really
random. So you didn't write it in French, you wrote it in English, and then a French company published it in French.
Right.
I was gonna say, that's impressive. You wrote your memoir in French.
No, so I'm like on this book tour in French, and I'm doing these TV shows, and they're speaking in my ear, and they're talking to me in French and asking me questions, and I'm answering through a translator. I have one person talking to me in English and one person talking to me in French, and I'm thinking, God, I really hope I don't mess. You guys are asking me. You know, but I always wanted to write books, but it's really hard because you're, and especially with like social media, you're just hoping you do your best, you know?
Right. Well, I haven't finished your book. I started your book. I'm halfway through it. Very interesting. I suggest the listeners and the viewers to get a copy of it. I'm going to include a link where they can actually go on, and I believe it's on available on Amazon. There's a Kindle version, which I also have. Thank you very much. So you can get it. I'll include the links. I'm going to include the links to your website and some of the interviews you've done. Actually, you've been on several TV spots all around the country talking about your advocacy. Now, Nikki, if there was one thing at this time that you could make the legislation or anything else that would help the victims, what would it be?
Oh boy, you know, I think in terms of what, child sexual abuse?
Yes, in terms of that for now. And then we can move on to another area if you think some other stuff that needs to be changed as far as not just the sexual abuse, but afterwards when you are to the point where you are now, you're not a victim anymore, you're a survivor. What else, you know, what tools do you need once you're a survivor? So let's go back to the first question. What can be done now? What would you change now to help the victims?
Well, I think the biggest thing is we always need preventative measures because we want to prevent child sexual abuse. And I know that's extremely difficult. But one of the things that really makes me mad is when somebody commits a crime for child sexual abuse, they usually only get like 5 years or a year. And it always boggles my mind because I don't understand that. And I wish we had stricter laws and penalties for people that commit these crimes. I would love to see these people locked away for life. And I would love to see that in every state that that's mandatory. And I would love that we have some sort of mandatory child sexual abuse prevention training for all teachers, you know, all people. I actually would like to see that in every job, you know, that's mandatory for everybody because it's so rampant. It's like child sexual abuse is something that is like an unspoken pandemic, believe it or not. And that's, so the lady who is the owner of the charity that I'm an ambassador for, I just wrote a foreword for her book. And I was researching what I was going to write. And there was someone who wrote a blurb about that. And they were talking, and I was thinking about the coronavirus at that time, all this stuff. And I'm thinking, you know, if we gave half as much attention on the news and in the media every day as we did about the coronavirus, as we did to child sexual abuse, I just could imagine how much we could eradicate this issue.
The horrible part about that is, sorry to interrupt you, but the horrible part about that is child sexual abuse, the victims are actually innocent children that they really don't have the ability to help themselves. So that's what makes it even worse. And yeah, you're absolutely right. There is actually more cases than people are aware of that's happening, and that needs to be stopped. Now, for my second part, what do you think needs to be changed to help survivors, such as yourself? Now you're to the point where you've talked about it, you've dealt with it. Now you're a survivor. Obviously, it's a day-to-day thing. It's, you know, living day-to-day. But what do you think needs to be changed to help the survivors?
Well, I'll tell you, the cost associated with survivors of child sexual abuse is tremendous. I wrote an article about that a few years ago, and it's millions. It's something, I want to say, it's a few $100,000 per survivor, and that goes back to mental health care, to lost wages, because right. Remember, it's, people don't realize, and I will be the first one to tell you, I, at many times in my life, as smart as I am, have had many periods where I can't hold down a job, and that's not because I am not intelligent. That is directly related to trauma and my mental health state at that time. So, which goes back to being sexually abused as a child. So people don't usually understand all of these things, okay? So the cost of child sexual abuse is tremendous.
The cost of treatment and everything else. What?
Yes, okay. I would love, and then if you can't hold down a job or all of the other things and disruptions in your life that come with that, how are you going to afford treatment? Because to get treatment and to have treatment for child sexual abuse is usually with someone who specializes in trauma, and it can be very expensive. It's kind of like the same thing with eating disorders. If you have an eating disorder, people don't know that the cost for an eating disorder treatment is $30,000 a month. Wow. And insurance doesn't cover that. So there's a big disconnect there, okay? So I would love to see people, survivors, having some sort of fund or guarantee access to healthcare or specialized providers that can give them treatment, just help them recover.
Well, even when you are a victim and you want to recover and you're on your way to recover, you have a financial obstacle to overcome, it seems.
Yes, for the most part. Most people are not celebrities, but it's great that celebrities speak out about their trauma, and I love it. They all do, but most people are not, and they don't have a lot of resources. So I think helping those people is what we need to do, and make sure that they have a guaranteed fund for their mental health care, because when you are mentally strong, then you are able to move on and do other things. It's like building blocks, right? You can't do one without the other.
Yes. That's awesome. Well, I know your time is limited. I appreciate you coming on. I could keep you on for hours and talk to you about everything. Again, for all the viewers and the listeners, I'm holding in my hand Washed Away, Nikki's memoirs. I'm going to include the link to everybody, to this book and all her other stuff in the podcast episode's description. Thank you, Nikki. I appreciate it. I hope you have a good day.
You too. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.